Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and it's great to have everybody joining us here as we head into the holiday season. I hope everybody is, watching out for reindeer attacks and things like that. Of course, I know up in Kyle's neck of the woods, they don't have enough snow for reindeer attacks, but we'll talk about that later. Before we get to Kyle, though, we have to bring in Sam, our resident elf. How you doing, Sam?
Well, I know I'm short, but I'm not sure my ears are like that. Well, I think I've gotten through my technological glitches tonight, so we can get on with this, because we have a really interesting guest tonight, but that Kyle will really enjoy, because it may just have a weather element in it. But speaking of weather, Kyle, what's going on with the weather?
Oh, Sam, there's a lot going on with the weather now and into the future. But hey, Jamie, you know what? Reindeer don't need snow to fly. So Santa and the reindeer can definitely still make a pass here over the western mountains here in the United States. Looking here at the map nationwide, looks like lots of winter weather products from the Great Lakes region all the way up through the north and east. Lake effect snow is in full effect from Buffalo to Rochester, all those areas in New York, as well as in western Michigan as well. Lots of snow being reported there. Our last observation I saw in Rochester, New York this evening, upwards of 10 inches of snow on the ground there from this system, and that's going to persist here for the next few days. So looking ahead now, looking nationwide, we're going to see some more heavy precipitation in the Pacific Northwest as our next system moves onshore. That's going to track to the south and to the east, dumping some heavy snow in the northern Rockies and hopefully in the central mountains of Colorado. I'm really keeping my fingers and toes crossed for that, that we get some snow here. High winds here on the Great Plains before that system loses some of its colder characteristics and starts to produce that heavy rain across the southeast United States. Eastern half of the U.S. is going to remain below normal temperature-wise. Looks like you're definitely going to have a white Christmas if you're east of the Mississippi. As far as in the western half of the U.S., west of the Mississippi, it's going to be a struggle. We're going to get a few small storms to sneak through in the weather pattern, but no widespread snowfall in the forecast here in at least the next 5 days. So keep doing your snow dances, burning the skis, sacrificing to Uller, the snow god. Keep your fingers crossed, folks. It may be a rough Christmas out here, but I'll tell you what, if you make it out to the mountains here in the western U.S., you're going to have a great time. So that's the disaster weather roundup, Sam. Back to you.
Hey, I have a question Sam takes off with it, Kyle. Any relief for the wildfire issues they're having in Southern California?
Well, Jamie, unfortunately not. The way that it's looking right now, at least in the next week to week and a half, above normal temperatures for the California area, as well as below normal precipitation there. We're sitting under a ridge of high pressure. So that ridge of high pressure over the western part of the U.S., especially the southwest U.S., where those wildfires are raging in California, that's bringing us those above normal temperatures, below normal precipitation. And unfortunately, that pattern does not look to break in the next week to week and a half. So unfortunately, no relief in sight for those heroic firefighting efforts there ongoing in California.
Wow, that's scary. And on another note, we have Kevin Ryder here with us, only we had a little problem. He was supposed to get one tooth pulled today, but it ended up being four. So he's not communicating by voice very well. So he's texting me. And he wanted me to ask you, Kyle, he called the other day and said it's all Kyle's fault because there was snow in Texas. And he wanted to know why that happened and is there going to be any more?
Well, hey, Kevin, that's a great question. Snow in Texas. I know a lot of our listeners across Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, there in the southeast. Oh, my gosh, you're waking up to snow in some of those parts here for this time of year. And that speaks to the weather pattern that we have in place across the United States. So with ridging or that high pressure in the western half of the U.S., that's as a result of the jet stream being pushed very, very far to the north. Keep bringing that warm air over the western part of the U.S. But everything that goes north also can then trend south, and that's the pattern there over the western U.S. So as that jet stream dips to the south across the central plains, it happened to dip just far enough to bring that colder air down from those northern regions, from Canada across the Midwest down to the southeast. And with the ample moisture in place from the Gulf of Mexico, that gave you some early snowfall down there. And so I want to say you're welcome, but at the same time, I want to say send it back to Colorado. We need it. So that's why that snowfall occurred. So it was that early season cold outbreak there. And look for those temps to stay below normal in the southeast as well.
Yeah, you're still in our snow, Kevin, but we'll forgive you for now. Well, let's move on. We have a very interesting guest, Daniel Zahner, and I hope I said that right, Dan.
Yeah, he hosts... first time.
Hey!
That doesn't happen very often, so
wow. good for me. But you do a podcast, and I can tell by your wonderful audio that you probably have some good equipment. You have a very interesting project.
I'm actually using my headphones, so I guess they're good ones.
Well, they are. So they sound good to me. And you're also involved with Team Rubicon, so we kind of want to hear about all those things. So why don't you tell us, because what you do is got a lot of acronyms in it, and I'm not going to begin to try and decipher that. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, and the rest of the crew. Yeah, my name is Dan Zahner, and I kind of work for an acronym soup, the Natural Hazards Engineering Research Infrastructure, or NERI for short. And of that, the component that I work for is the Network Coordination Office, or the NCO. So we're kind of the headquarters of the 10 different facilities, 8 of which have experimental rigs that we'll get into later. So we're a National Science Foundation-funded research center, and the body that I work for kind of coordinates all of the activities and does the governance part and reports to the NSF about how we're spending their money and that kind of thing. I'm also, part of the Team Rubicon, like you said, which was actually came about from a podcast interview. Before that, I think I found out about them through a friend of mine who's a clothing designer for Hylete, an athletic wear company. I'm actually wearing one of their shirts now. But they support Team Rubicon. I thought it was a great partnership and bought one of the shirts and wanted to get him on the show, and ended up talking to Nick Merzlach from their core team, who is the incident management team lead for the operation down in Houston for a while. He's like, hey, you should come down and get out in the field with us. And so I did, and volunteered down in Rockport, Port Aransas area for 4 days. And it was probably one of the most amazing experiences of my life down there, just being able to help out some really awesome people with some great teammates, use some of the skills and experiences that I've been developing over the past few years. And yeah, it's been a great ride so far.
I think you're a certified disaster junkie now. Dr. Joe, who's not with us tonight, and myself were deployed 3 times during those hurricanes. And you mentioned Rockport. I believe that Kevin had also gone down there to do some IT work, so you might have something in common there. But let's talk. You have a podcast about natural hazards research and how scientists are working to make this society in general more resilient. Let's talk about that a bit.
Yes. So my show is called Design Safe Radio, and it comes out of our mission to do outreach from not just our center, but also other scientists and organizations that are doing great work to help make our society more resilient to all the hazards that nature has to throw at us, from hurricanes and earthquakes to tsunami to coastal erosion. We don't deal too much in wildfires, but that kind of thing. And so I started this back as an idea from a site visit that we had with the National Science Foundation in July. And they gave us some great feedback on how we could improve our outreach as the Network Coordination Office for NERI. And so I was like, hey, we should do a podcast because it's fairly cheap. And I had the time in my schedule and was developing the skills, and had some other folks that I was good friends with who had their own shows who could kind of help me get started. And then the team thought it was a great idea, so I kind of took it off and ran with it. published the first episode in August, and we're up to number 19 now. And I've talked to everybody from people from Team Rubicon to scientists who are researching coastal storm surge and developing all those models that you see when you're watching the Weather Channel and the hurricanes are rolling in and say, oh, you're going to have 6 to 10 feet of storm surge. Well, those are the scientists putting together the models that use, I think he said they use 4,800 computer cores. It takes about an hour to churn through the entire Gulf Coast of Texas when Hurricane Harvey was coming in, and they calculate all the storm surge and everything. So those kind of guys to a couple of members of the NOAA Hurricane Hunters. We talked to a pilot who's been flying P-3 Orion aircraft through hurricanes for 8 seasons now, and a scientist, Dr. Frank Marks, who's been with the Hurricane Research Center for going on 37 years now.
Oh, my God, and, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of a legend in the community that, my gosh, that guy has got some stories. Oh, my goodness.
I'll bet.
I think my favorite one that he mentioned was, I think it was Hurricane Hugo. He flew through it when it was a Category 5, which they didn't know at the time, because back in those days, they only had reflectance radar, not Doppler radar. And it took a long time to analyze. So they thought it was a Category 2. Turned out it was a Category 5. They didn't do a pass through it at higher altitude beforehand. And they flew through a Category 5 low altitude, like 1,500 feet or something, and actually had one of their engines catch fire and had to fly around the middle of the eye of the hurricane, have a couple other planes fly in and inspect them and make sure they're okay. But he still talks about that data set and how there's nobody stupid enough to do that anymore. So they it's a pretty unique data set that they got and haven't replicated it since.
Well, it's funny you should mention how your association with Rubicon happened by accident on a podcast. Well, that's kind of how we got Kyle. He liked something, and I looked at his bio. I went ski patroller and a meteorologist. It's like, I gotta grab this guy. We got him on the podcast, and he's been here ever since. And Jamie's asking him if he's geeking out yet, because he's gonna love these topics you have on the podcast. I took a look, but you're talking about weather related stuff that you're researching in terms of wind, earthquakes, tsunamis, coastal erosion, and rapid response after those events. Can you talk a bit about that? That's really going to geek him out.
Oh, man. So I don't know if you've gotten a chance to look at our website yet, designsafe-ci.org. There's a section there about our experimental facilities. So the unique nature of our center, we've got each different experimental facility has their own award from the NSF, National Science Foundation. And we cover the gamut of natural hazards from geotechnical and structural research sites like Lehigh University. Their advanced technology for large structural systems. They can look at everything from subsystems and components that you're trying to retrofit to a building to full-size structures in some cases. But their specialty is called hybrid simulation. So you model most of a structure, say a parking garage, in a computer simulation, but then you actually physically model, maybe you're putting in a damper in that garage to dampen some seismic vibrations, you actually build that component, and then you have a bunch of sensors and computer gadgetry and things to make the physical part talk to the computer model, and then you do your testing in the physical realm, and it gives its feedback to the numerical model and vice versa, so you can test small components but actually see how that makes an impact on the larger structure. It blows my mind every time they talk about it.
Oh, my God. Well, speaking of blowing somebody's mind, I think Kyle's blowing up and probably has a dozen questions for you. So I'm going to let him take a run at this. Go, Kyle.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Sam. Yeah, I'm just totally in awe with this. It kind of takes me back to my graduate school days in Madison and kind of being on the,
another
on the cutting
big
edge.
Guy, all right.
Yeah, yeah. And Dan, I just want to get your perspective on this, because you know you've given some great examples so far, some of the ongoing research that's currently ongoing within this research institute that you're part of, but for our listeners out there who are largely based in the, say, medical, emergency management, public safety, and non-governmental organization type of fields, why is this research that's ongoing with natural hazards, why do you feel that is so critical for our operational folks in the field?
Yeah, that's a great question. A couple of reasons. First off, it's helping update building codes, evacuation planning and mapping. We're actually doing a lot of work, Oregon State University, with their WAVE research lab on what could happen if the Cascadia subduction zone, that fault line in the Pacific Northwest, if that gives way and there's a huge tsunami that hits the coast of Oregon and Washington. They work with public officials and give them their updated tsunami kind of forecasting, essentially. If that happens, say, okay, people in this area are going to get 15 minutes of notice to get to higher ground. Let's plan out an evacuation map and do drills and training for the local EMS and fire and all those first responders so that when this happens, whether it's tomorrow or 100 years from now, we'll be prepared. So a lot of our research centers focus on outreach to the community in that way. We've also got two of our wind facilities, Florida International University and University of Florida. They work very closely with local emergency management, government officials for how to prepare their citizens for hurricane season every year. And then also our rapid response facility that we're getting started this year. They'll be operational this summer, in the University of Washington. Part of what they're going to be doing as well is learning how to integrate with, NGOs and response organizations when they're on the ground, taking their scientific data, being able to feed that data back to those communities and help them have a more effective response.
That's very cool. I'd like to hear more about that. Go ahead. Run with it, Kyle. Geek out, dude.
No, I would say that is so critical. I think, Dan, what you just said is being able to connect the research and things to the practitioners in the field. And it's really exciting to hear that you're spinning that up there in the Pacific Northwest area. I know there's a lot of brilliant minds up there, a lot of great research minds, and I'm really excited to see that program move forward. And this is especially because I come at this not as a meteorologist only, but also as one meteorologist who has an emergency management background. So I've seen those two fields come together, and as an educator of natural hazards, I just want to get your take on this too. I like to think of kind of this weather enterprise as a whole, and folks that have been listening to the Disaster Podcast, you've heard it from a couple different sides. You've heard the research side that here that Dan's talking about tonight, and that's a very important piece to it. You've also heard the operations side that we talk about, the folks, the boots on the ground, and also these forecasting efforts and modeling efforts that are ongoing in order to give our boots on the ground folks the most accurate information they can so they can make the best decisions. But then we also have those of us that are kind of caught in the middle of all that, and that's the societal application side, with communicating these hazards to not just our employees and our organizations, but the public as well. And so I think of this as a three-legged stool of this weather enterprise, where if any one of those three legs fails, whether it be the research, the operations, or the societal applications piece, if any one of those fails, the weather enterprise as a whole can fail, and there can be catastrophic effects that stem from that. So, the research side, definitely a major player in this.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you can see kind of when one of those legs of the stool failed in history. I mean, even as recent as Hurricane Katrina, where the societal leg was weak, or Andrew, same thing. But then the research picked up afterwards to help responses for hurricanes like Irma and Harvey be more effective. And in between and before those, building codes were updated. Government and other organizations that are informing the public are better equipped and educated themselves so that they can accurately inform the public about when they need to prepare, how they need to prepare, and how to best look out for their constituents and their families and friends, and to take things seriously when they need to be taken seriously, but also not to kind of be the people that cry wolf all the time. So yeah, there's been a lot of learning in all those areas, all those three areas in the past, you know, couple of decades.
Absolutely. And especially recently with our with the hurricanes in the southeast and the south central U.S., very, very large, damaging and impactful events. And, you know, each act time we activate for our organization, whether it be for a training exercise of some kind or whether it's a real life operation, we can always improve our resilience as an organization. We can learn and of always sharing those lessons as well with all of us so that we on the research side and kind of the science side of things can be more informed of what the operations folks will need in the field.
Absolutely.
And that kind of leads me into my next question. You mentioned that you handle a lot of the scheduling of the projects and things across these many facilities that you're kind of overseeing. And what are some things? I don't know if you can give us any hints or sneak peeks, perhaps. But what's on the horizon, or kind of what are you looking at as kind of what's coming up, and what things are on the horizon as far as the research on the science side that can help us inform us on the operations side?
Yeah, well, the really cool thing is, since we're a publicly funded center, you can actually look up that schedule anytime you want on the Design Safe website. But I'll give you kind of a bit of a sneak peek. We're going to be doing some overhauls, actually, to one of our research tools at University of Florida. They're doing a major equipment upgrade this spring that'll give them some amazing capabilities in their wind tunnel to actually vary the geometry of a specimen with a building almost in real time so that they can test out different building configurations at different wind fields. We've also got a really exciting project that just finished their first phase, looking at cross-laminated timber structures as a way to produce seismically resilient buildings. They just tested a two-story structure over the summer, and they were planning over the next year and a half or so on building a 10-story structure out at UC San Diego. The cross-laminated timber, basically, if you think about plywood, normally we think of that as thin sheets of veneer glued together, in layers. Well, cross-laminated timber is kind of like that, but with 2x4s laminated in panels and then glued layer by layer. And the way this research team has designed their structure is really amazing. You have to see the video. I'll send you a link. But essentially, they have two walls in the middle of the structure that rock back and forth during a seismic event and let the structure be flexible and then settle back to equilibrium after the earthquake is stopped with very minimal damage. They actually subjected it to, I don't know if any of you remember the Northridge earthquake from the early 90s out in the Bay Area.
I absolutely do.
They subjected that building to the intensity and the vibrations from the Northridge earthquake, I think 20 times without it failing.
That's wow. Yeah. Amazing. I worked for Red Cross back then. And, I was in Sylmar, operating a shelter for some time after that.
Wow.
And I remember the aftershocks. I couldn't even imagine what the original shock was like. But now that I've grabbed the mic here, Kevin's geeking out on the text here. He wants to know more about, you mentioned training with local resources, and he's kind of excited to find out where, you mentioned a couple of things, but where else in the country are you working on some stuff?
Yeah. One of our facilities, UT Austin, is actually a fleet of mobile trucks that are equipped with shakers. So they do a lot of training for people who may not even be in seismically active areas on how their structures will respond. And also they use them for structural health monitoring of things like bridges. They just got back from a project out in New Jersey, I think, where they shook a bridge and measured its vibrations and we're able to get some data on how that bridge is doing health-wise. So there's some outreach from that group ongoing kind of all over the place. But each of the universities does a really good job at doing, because they're very strategically placed for the types of hazards that their local communities see. So we have two of the UC campuses, Davis and San Diego. They're both in geotechnical and structural modeling and earthquake science, and there's a very seismically active area out there. So they're constantly working with like the California Department of Transportation, Caltrans, and local utilities and things like that to help them develop more seismically resilient infrastructure. Yeah, and then our wind facilities, Florida, University of Florida, Florida International University, they have, actually all of those, all our facilities have workshops, some of which are open to the public. We also have, as part of the network coordination office, we have the education community outreach portion that partners with science teachers all over the country to give them tools to teach their students on about natural hazards and how they work. And we have a number of kind of scale models of some of our facilities, like the wall of wind at Florida International University. We've got a scale model of that for showing science teachers how wind tunnels work and doing wind testing on structure and things like that. So a lot of outreach going on all over the place.
That is so cool. I'm going to go to Jamie, but Kevin is asking real quick, which Utah campus, and is that kind of information on the website or available?
Yes. On DesignSafe, our website, there is a section for Learning Center. There's all about education and training. Also, you know, teacher and student resources. And then for anybody listening who might be currently in an undergraduate program, there's a research experience for undergraduates or REU program where you can actually go and study and work at one of these sites for the whole summer. And just hearing from some of those students about that experience is pretty amazing. The amount of real world research experience they get throughout that program.
Wow. Yeah, he was actually talking about University of Texas. Duh. That's a problem when you're typing.
Oh, anyway, UT Austin. Yeah.
But I'm going to throw it to Jamie. We've kept him in the background there, so I think he has a question or comment for you.
I'm watching along on the website while you're talking there, Dan, and it's interesting to just kind of look through. I mean, there's quite an extensive learning center and a collection of resources on the site, and we'll make sure we have links to all of that. It looks like you guys have some online resources and seminars and also YouTube videos that are quite extensive. It's pretty impressive that these things are out there available for the public to check out and understand better what you do. How often do you update these things and add new material to your content?
Constantly. We've got a team, our communications team is, you know, scouring all of our research collaborators for the best in natural hazards research, the cutting edge stuff. So we put that out on Facebook pretty regularly. We've also published a monthly and quarterly newsletter. We've got our Slack channel that is free and open to the public. You can get in there and ask any question you want of our practitioners, our scientists. So feel free to take advantage of that as well. It's all paid for by your tax dollars, so take advantage.
Well, I think you have two new best friends, Kevin sending hearts, which is a little weird. A little weird, Kevin, but I think we get the gist of that.
I think he's medicated, and, so it's okay.
He's medicated for sure. But I think Kyle is your new best friend, and I honestly think you need to have him on your podcast.
I think you two can have some
interesting conversations. Yeah. So there you go.
That would be great. Yeah, I'd be happy to have you. And just wanted to say, if you guys get into our Slack community, we've got a channel on there for multi-hazard engineers. We've got a wind engineering one. We've got geotech, structural. Whenever we do recons of different events, so Hurricane Harvey, Irma, the Mexico City earthquake, we post pictures in there. So feel free to go and geek out and ask questions. Another one area of the DesignSafe website that you might be really interested in is our recon portal. If you go under the research workbench and then a recon portal, you'll see a map there of all of the reconnaissance work that our teams have done. Everything from pictures to LIDAR measurements to satellite imagery, all sorts of things are there and free for you to use. And there's lots of data sets if you really want to get in.
And I'm looking at just one of them right now. I'm looking at multi-hazard performance of load-bearing wall systems in Haiti after Hurricane Matthew. So you're working internationally as well and looking at all sorts of how impacts from disasters on different types of structures, which is pretty impressive because that all translates back to how things affect impacts here in the States.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you highlighted that one. I had a great opportunity to talk with a professor from University of Notre Dame, Tracy Kajewski Correa, who did a lot of work out in Haiti, and her teams are still out there after the earthquake in 2010 and then the Hurricane Matthew after that, working with the local communities and just learning how amazingly resourceful the people down there are and how extremely aware of their situation and the hazards that are presented to them they are, but just learning their methods for problem solving, but also, you know, giving them, you know, the research and tools and technology that they can use and apply to help their society be more resilient, the most vulnerable of the vulnerable people down there. And something that she impressed upon me is that she's got a dual appointment in, I believe, engineering and social science. I'll have to go back and see exactly what her appointment is. But it's very interesting intersection of all that great structural kind of engineering knowledge that you get, but also the human element and how we need to realize as hazard engineers and practitioners that when a disaster hits, it's not just structures and infrastructure that are affected. It's people's homes and their lives and their families. And that when you're looking at structural testing or updating something or doing some research on response or whatever, it's really impacting people's lives at the most fundamental level.
Oh, for sure. Kyle's jumping up and down again, so I'm going to close that
now. No, Dan, I wanted to echo and to really thank you for bringing up the human side of things here, because while we're talking about this great research that's going on, this cutting edge, you know, these innovations and things from these research institutes across the U.S. and with their global reach, we can't forget as practitioners, as scientists, and as just everyday folks that these disasters have a human component, and that can often be lost when you're looking at these, you know, the photos from, you know, looking at the weather maps and looking at these data and things like that, where you're like, oh, yes, we made some great advances and this is great, but being able to tie it back and know that the work that the scientists are doing on the research side, these cutting edge innovations, these technologies that are coming out in this research, ultimately will help to inform planning, help to inform, you know, building codes and things, and ultimately can also help to inform operations and response as well. And so you're attacking all the different areas and informing all the different areas ultimately of the emergency management kind of cycle, as it were. And I think that's really a key takeaway for a lot of our listeners here on the Disaster Podcast, is that don't disregard the folks in the research community, because yes, they're scientists and sometimes they can be nerds like me here. I'm totally nerding out tonight. This is great. You're speaking my language, Dan, big time. But being able to understand that there is a human component behind this, and that us as scientists, we understand that. And that is why we are so very passionate about the work that we do.
Yeah, yep, exactly right. And I think that scientists as well as practitioners can learn so much from each other. That was one of the things I was so thankful for about being able to go out with Team Rubicon. And I think you guys all have found the same thing, is being able to have that boots on the ground experience, however short, really informs your research questions at their most base levels and motivates you to do that work the best that you can, because you know you've met, you've seen and worked with the people that it's going to affect. And I mean, I mean, I'm sending Christmas cards and Thanksgiving cards to people that I help down there. And, you know, they're sending me pictures of their cats and stuff. Like, I mean, I feel like some of the people that I worked for serving down in Port Aransas are some of my closest friends and like family now. And next time I hear about a research project in a wind tunnel about, you know, measuring internal pressure or whatever, it's like, oh, yeah. That's going to help out people like David and Miriam, whose roof was blown off in the hurricane. It'll help people like that keep their lives together for the next one.
Oh my God, Dan, this is just an amazing amount of information.
Sorry, I'm getting choked up.
I haven't seen, no, but I seriously haven't seen people on the show get quite as excited about a topic as they have this one. And, of course, we're, you know, very much into taking care of people, both the practitioners out there as well as the people affected by disaster. And I have to share, Kyle just made the comment. He said he was done, but, he believes your passion is pure. And I think that's a really nice comment because you come across as being very honest and realistic about what you're doing. And boy, he's going to have some studying to do. We got to have you on again really soon. Because I'm sure there's so much more to talk about. In the meantime, Kevin and Kevin and Kyle and Jamie and I will do some research and listen to your podcast, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about. This was truly fascinating. Educational experience. You know, as much as we think we've learned a lot of things, we always find there's so much more we don't know. Right, Jamie?
Absolutely. And, it wouldn't be a disaster podcast episode if we didn't thank our very generous sponsors at Paragon Medical Education Group. And they're all about education and all about the things that you need to learn to do a better job the next time or the first time if you're a responder who hasn't had to deal with a major disaster incident in your community. Either way, you know, I urge all of you to reach out to the folks over at Paragon, Dr. Joe, who's not here tonight, and Jim Logan and the rest of the team over there. Find out what they can do. There are ways they can get funding available for you to bring them in to do some of their experiential training and education programs and really tailor it to what you expect to see in your community. Whether you want to do something with something like an active shooter, or if you're looking at a natural disaster situation because you're in hurricane or in Tornado Alley, whatever the case may be, they can come in and really help you beef up your system and your response efforts. And I think a lot of what they apply probably lessons learned coming down through their experience as federal USAR responders and whatnot probably comes in some no small measure from the research coming from the folks that Daniel works with. And I think that we should keep that in mind. You know, when these USAR people are going in there and searching structures, understanding how structures respond after a disaster is probably something that DesignSafe is very involved with. Am I right, Daniel?
Absolutely. Yep. We love you, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, it's great to keep that in mind. So check out Paragon Medical Education Group at paragonmedicalgroup.com. You can also find them over at ParagonMedEDU on Twitter. Look them up. We have links to them in our Facebook group and on disasterpodcast.com. Let them know, if nothing else, to thank them for continuing to bring the Disaster Podcast out for you each week. We appreciate their continued support, and we'll keep working with them as long as they'll have us, that's for sure. Daniel, you know, real quick, where can folks find your podcast? Again, tell us the name of it and where they can look you up and dial in, because I think this would be some fascinating information for them to follow.
Yeah, thanks. It's called Design Safe Radio. Design Safe's all one word. And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Carrier Pigeon. we're on Facebook, Design Safe Radio, or the research network NARI is at NARI Design Safe on Facebook and Twitter. And then our website is designsafe-ci.org. And it's public. It's paid for by the National Science Foundation. Feel free to get on there. Get in with us, get on our Slack channel. Feel free to get on there too. You can find that on our website, and looking forward to connecting with you, you guys and your listeners.
Definitely. And we'll make sure we have links to all of that in the show notes for this episode. And we just want to thank you again for coming on. And I agree with Sam, we're going to have you back on. And if, you know, as things come up on your end, that you'd like to see us talk about, or maybe even connect us with some of the folks you've talked to on your show, we can definitely do that. And so just reach out to us and let us know what topic you'd like to come on, and we'd love to have you back.
Absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to collaborating with you guys in the future. And I'll take a look at your episodes, and feel free to do the same for mine. And oh, that guy looks really great. Get him on here. We'll make you an introduction. And everybody's great. Some of the most awesome people I've ever met. So I'm sure they'd be happy to talk with you.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for coming.
So Jamie, it was probably good that our USAR guys weren't on, and this would have been a really long podcast. So we'll have to give Dr. Joe the opportunity to have this conversation with Dan, because that's another
guy. Sounds good.
Definitely. Maybe he can connect us with a structural engineer, and we can just let them talk.
Yes. That'd be awesome. The rest of us are snoring in the background.
Oh, that's all right. I don't think it'll be anything boring about it, actually.
You didn't geek us out too much. I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's the art of a good podcast host, right? Like you guys have done. You rein it in and then ask probing questions and clarify. And so, yeah.
Very cool.
Keep us engineers easily listenable.
You do a good job.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So I'm gonna go ahead.
That's why I love doing this. I'm a mechanical engineer who happens to like talking to people, so I can kind of translate.
It's always good to have one of those.
Well, we'll definitely have links to all of this, and I can't encourage people enough to go and check out these resources. I'm a big fan of all the things that are federally available online for the citizens of this country and the responders and everybody else. There's so many resources that we just aren't aware of, and I'm so glad to have the ability to point this additional resource out to folks. I think this is going to be very interesting to a lot of people in our audience. So thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Kevin is not on, so I'm just going to go ahead and speak for him. Check out Kevin Ryder for his wilderness education programs over at wildsafety.com, and we'll have a link to him as well in the show notes. He's been, of course, as you've heard, sending comments and questions in to Sam via text message and while he listened in. Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social medias under the handle WXKyleNelson. Feel free to connect with me there and continue the conversation.
Definitely. Sam, how about you?
Well, you find me in the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11 on the disasterpodcast.com website. And Dan, we'd love you to come over to our Facebook site for the Disaster Podcast, because I think, like Jamie said, this will be of interest to our listeners, and they may have some questions for you because there was just so much information. So just pop over there and request to come in, and we'll invite you in. What about you, Jamie?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I always encourage folks to join us over in our Facebook group. We have all sorts of responders from ER docs, USAR people, DMAT, and other responders, local responders, all part of our group over there. So just search for Disaster Podcast. We're request to join the group. We'd love to have you come in. We'll definitely approve that. And then you can join the conversation over there. And, of course, for me, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations. So friend, follow me, or otherwise connect with me there. And I'm looking forward to having Daniel back on again in the future, Sam, because, you know, it's interesting. We talk about a lot of different things, but this is really the first time we've really talked about the way things happen that create disaster. We've talked about responding to disasters. We talked about the medical impacts of those things. But what does it mean when a structure collapses? Why does the structure collapse? You know, there's a lot of things that go into that. And it's been great hearing Daniel talk about just the amazing research going on out there to help alleviate and mitigate some of these issues.
Exactly. And like, who knew? I mean, the scientists kind of keep to themselves. And other than the fact that Dan is bringing all us out through his podcast and everything, who would know that these guys are working so hard to make society more resilient? And I know Joe is going to love this and want to have more conversation. But, you know, every time we think we've covered everything, there's always something new out there to learn. So it's just another example of disaster medicine. It's not our everyday medicine.